What happens after we pass from this world? Is there a life after this one? Jay Wiedner thinks so, and his latest work, Sacred Mysteries Infinity, The Ultimate Trip, Journey Beyond Death. We're going to talk with Jay about that and much more when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Jay Wiedner, author, filmmaker, co-author of numerous works, and he's produced and directed documentary films, 2012, The Odyssey, Secrets of Alchemy, Earth Under Fire, and many others. Since 2000, Jay Wiedner has been the president of Sacred Mysteries Productions. Now, that's a company dedicated to producing high-quality films that challenge perceptions and help understand the nature of reality. Tonight, we talk with Jay about his recent work about life after death. He's back on Coast to Coast. Hey, Jay, how are you?
I'm great, George. How are you?
Good. You've been busy.
I have been. Never a dull moment.
No, not at all. And your Sacred Mystery seems to be doing really well these days.
They are. It's one of the few businesses probably doing well in this economy because I think, well, we're offering hope, I think, to people and spiritual sustenance in a desperate time, you know.
You've jumped into life after death. Tell me why.
Well, that's an interesting story. It began in 2002. When my mother was diagnosed with cancer, and I was, you know, steeped in metaphysical concepts and esoteria and things, and thought that this would be no problem. I could talk to her and, you know, ease her fears about what was about to happen, and it didn't work. She was still, you know, filled with fear, and nothing I said could convince her that there was nothing to fear outside, of course, the pain. And she passed away in late 2002, and I was very depressed about it. And one night I was out to dinner with my friend Alberto Violdo, and I was telling him about it, and he had gone through a similar experience when his father had died. And slowly over the next two or three years, we developed this idea that we needed to make a film that anyone could see to, you know, help ease those fears and show what's really going on at death and after death, but mostly to show your loved ones, your family, your friends who might be going through this experience, and to help them not be fearful. And so that was the real point of the whole thing was, you know, pop the DVD in and show your loved ones a beautiful film filled with optimism and stories about death and life after death. But not just that, the infinite nature of reality. You know, this reality, we're constantly being told by our leaders that everything in this world and universe is finite. And that's actually not true. We live in an infinite universe of infinite possibilities. And so there that, and there were a lot of other motivations. Another motivation for making the film was, frankly, a little bit of a subversive reason. And that is that I knew that if people realized that there was no such thing as death, not really, then they would no longer be afraid of their lives. And if they are no longer afraid of their lives, then no one could tell them what to do. And maybe trying to foment a quiet revolution in the way that we view ourselves and the world. And once we realize that there's no such thing as death, then I think we're going to be liberated from the political and social environment that we've been thrust into. And I think all the ancient spiritual traditions were trying to do that, but we've lost track somewhere along the way. And now I'm trying, and we're all trying, I think you're trying, we're all trying to get back on track to this kind of place where we can face up to our lives without being fearful of death, of life, of each other, of politicians, of governments. And when that happens, they better run for the hills because they can't tell us what to do anymore. And I think that moment is nearer than we think. I really do.
When you put together your work for this particular documentary, Infinity, The Ultimate Trip, Journey Beyond Death, how did you go about researching it? How'd you put the pieces together?
Well, it started out, it's actually quite a fascinating story because I actually didn't write the film. It wrote itself. It was written by a series of strange synchronicities and coincidences that kept occurring, and I just kept following every synchronicity and bringing the camera crew along and filming everything I could. And at first, I had a very clinical film and wasn't real happy with it. It took 4 years to make the film, but after a while, I started gathering really incredible interviews, like the one with Renata Dollinger about her experiences escaping Germany and meeting a person who told her her entire life and what it would be, and it all came true. And stories like that, until I realized that I had this body of stories that were all interrelated that told this story about infinity. And so I read a lot of books. I read, you know, Stanislav Grof's books on death, and I read my friend Daniel Brinkley's books and a lot of other people's books. But it really, truly did write itself, and I was really gratified when I finally sat down and started editing it, how smoothly it all just went together and how it just made total sense, and I didn't have to intrude or put any narration or subtitles or anything in it. It just kind of unfolded like a dream, and that I'm really proud. So I think it's definitely Sacred Mystery's best film and my best film, and we're getting rave reviews, and everybody loves it and everything. But the real point of it is that We all must face this moment at the end of our lives, but what does it mean? And I think we have to understand that we're higher dimensional beings who are encased in a body. And just because the body stops breathing doesn't mean your higher dimensional self doesn't go on living. It does go on living. And once you realize that, you not only have no fear of death, but you have a great sense of compassion for your fellow living beings, whether they be animals or plants or humans, because they all possess a higher dimensional self that from which they came from and for which they are going to return. And I think that is the kind of the narrative that we've lost here in the West. It's a well-known fact that the Catholic Church actually believes in reincarnation, but they don't think it should be taught as a doctrine because it will make people not try very hard in this life, supposedly, and they'll just wait for their next life to start their work. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if I buy that. You know, it's a good reason. Either way, I think now at this point in time, with the overflow of information coming in all directions, it's time to let people know that 90% of the rest of the world has another point of view, which is that we have an infinite nature and we're infinite beings, and we're on a giant quest to achieve a certain kind of understanding of this universe. And the Catholics teach that, and the Hindus teach that, and the Buddhists, and the Muslims, and the Jews, and the indigenous peoples teach this. It's a universal construct of ideas that we are beginning to come back to and come to grips with. And when we do, we will be free of the pain that we go through every day, thinking that we have to gather everything now, that we have to get as much as we can now. And when we realize that after we die, we're coming back, we're not going to be so destructive of the environment because we got to come back to this. And so a lot of dynamic changes can come about once we change our idea of the fact that we are not finite, we're infinite beings, and that there really is no such thing as death. And that is really the, I guess you could say, the subversive reasons for the film. And it must be doing the right thing, because I'm getting hundreds and hundreds of emails every week, and we're getting all these reviews about it. And I haven't really, you know, I finished the film over a year ago, and I'm off on other projects now. The one funny thing about filmmaking is it takes so long to finish a film, and then
sure does.
Yeah, and then you got to put it out, and so you kind of forget what the film was about. So before I came on, I watched the film a couple days ago, and I went, "Oh yeah, this is pretty good."
Well, you've got some great players in this as well. It's almost like a mini who's who of past Coast to Coast guests.
It is. You've got some good people there. Danion Brinkley and
Brian
John
Weiss.
Holland.
You got them all.
Yeah, Greg Braden, and so many people wanted to be in it. That was the other interesting thing about this film. Usually we have to cajole people to be in our film, but I would just say a couple sentences to, say, Danion Brinkley, and he was immediately on board with it. And they all love it, and they're very proud of their being in the film, and I'm very happy that they decided to participate, because it's one of those things that, you know, if nothing else, it's filled with a lot of good karma. So just by making it, maybe I'll be redeemed for any of the bad things I've done.
Well, you know, I have a simple formula, Jay, and that is enjoy your life to its fullest. But when the time is up, the time is up.
It is. And one of the things I like about the film and the ideas is this whole idea of the past life review, and this idea that, you know, you're going to live your entire life again when you die, like watching a video recording. And you want to make sure that your film that you watch at the end of your life is the best film that you can possibly make. And so no matter what you've done in your life that you're ashamed of or that you don't feel good about, or a divorce or whatever it is, you know, you still have a chance to redeem yourself, and you can start right now. And I think that's another message in the film that I wanted to get across, that, you know, it's never too late to come back to compassion and loving each other and treating each other kindly. And that kind of thing. And that's another thing I think we need in this society now, especially with this economic crisis that we're under and things like that. So when you see a guy asking for, you know, some money, and you know it's probably going to go to alcohol or drugs, you know, maybe you ought to still help him, because there's still a chance that in that one moment he can be redeemed, or they can be redeemed too.
Well, why don't you go get him a hamburger?
That's an even better idea. Instead of having them go out and buy something that's going to be bad for them, go get them some food.
I had a friend who did that. Somebody was begging for money. He was convinced it was going to go and buy a little pint or something else. He went and said, "What do you want the money for?" He said, "I just want to get a hamburger." So he went and got it for him, brought it back. And as he was driving away, my friend, as he was driving away, he looks in his rearview mirror. The guy's tossing the hamburger over the bridge.
Yes, well, there's always failure too, but you still have to try, and it's good that he did that. I do that too. I'll see somebody out there in the rain, you know, begging for money or whatever, and I'll go buy them a latte or a cup of tea or something, and I've seen them pour it out. So, but still, you know, you need to do it, and this world is. We are being judged. We're not being judged severely. We're actually the judge and jury and the defending attorney of ourselves. And when we die, we kind of go into a trial. There's a great movie called Defending Your Life with Albert Brooks and Shirley MacLaine.
Right.
Oh, it's a great movie. And he, you know, he goes through his past life reviews, and he finds he's just one failure after another, right? And but still, you know, you have to try, and you have to be, you know, whatever it is that you can be in this world, because you just never know when the final time comes. There's a difference between. You may not be in a constantly reoccurring reincarnation state. It may only be a few lives, and so you never know when, you know, you have gone too far and you've used up all of your good karma, and now it's time for you to actually end your cycle of existence. And this is a definite possibility too, which is where I think the Christian religion gets their concepts of heaven and hell and things. So You know, just because you may be coming back in a reincarnation doesn't mean you can be lazy now and not try. And I think once we get this idea into our heads, I think the society and our culture is immediately going to begin repairing itself. And I think that in the end, it's a better thing that we do if we try to help each other now and not wait.
Tell me a little bit more about this life review. What's its real purpose?
Its real purpose, the interesting thing about this life review I found was not just that you go through this life backwards in some cases, meeting all the people that you met and seeing the good and the bad that you've done, but you actually live the things that you did to other people through them. So if you committed a nasty act to someone, you've got to go through what that person went through. And if you did something nice to someone, you also get to go through that too. So there's two sides of the coin. And I think that that's actually the most interesting part of it. For instance, you know, you could a kid could be drafted into a war and do a lot of terrible things in a war. And in the past life, he has to go through all of the pain that he put down on people. So if you did have some unfortunate incidences when you were early in life, make sure that you spend the rest of your life doing as much good as you can in this world so that that little nasty thing that you did early on isn't so bad during the past life review. I can imagine that a past life review can actually be quite embarrassing, I would imagine, to a lot of people, especially they look back into their youth and see all the silly things that they believed and the silly things that they did and the cruel things that they did to people. And so, you know, it's important for us to realize that it just because you did something bad some other time in your life, there's plenty of time to make up for it. You know, Danion Brinkley goes around hugging everybody. He's the hug monster.
He does.
Yeah, and he hugs you, and he's huge. He about breaks your ribs when he hugs you. But you know what? He's passing out so much good karma that in the end, you know, he's going to have a million hugs before he gets to anything bad that he did. And that's really a good attitude to take, I think.
If you've done a lot of good things in your life, though, does that show up in the life review as well, or just the
absolutely,
bad things?
Absolutely, yes. And you don't know what you've done. You know, you don't. The thing about good, you know, you did bad things. But the thing about good things is you just never know what you really did. You could have, you know, recommended someone for a promotion and changed their entire life, or maybe you asked a girl to dance who had never been asked to dance before and changed her entire life. You just don't know. There's a million little conduits that you can go down, and each one of them has ramifications. And, you know, so someone like you, George, you know, you're doing this show and you're sending out all this information, and you're changing millions of lives, and probably for the better, because they're becoming more enlightened. So, you know, all the people that you have given, shown the way via this radio show, you're going to go through all that. And I would say you've got a pretty good life review ahead of you. And I think a lot of people wish they could have a life where they could do as much good as you're doing. And I think we actually can do that. And you don't have to have a radio show with millions of listeners. You can just, you know, compliment someone, say hi to them when you're at the Safeway, the checker, make sure she understands that, you know, you understand that she's a human being. And when your waitress comes, you know, pay her a compliment. It doesn't hurt. It only helps. And make sure it's sincere and not, you're not doing it just to have a good life review.
Right. Exactly. You're not doing it just for show, right?
Yeah, it's got to be real, because you can't escape the life review. It's inescapable. It's something so profound, and people who have had near-death experiences whom we interview in the film Infinity, you know, they come back, and some of them cry for a month after their life review. Sometimes it's a cry of joy. Sometimes it's a cry of pain. But, you know, this life review is extremely profound. And I've never had one. I've never had an NDE.
Hold on, Jay. We'll be back in a moment and find out why you've never had one when we come right back. And our special guest tonight is Jay Widener as we talk about his latest work, Infinity, The Ultimate Trip. And we'll be back with more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Jay, the fact that you haven't had a near-death experience, of course, does not stop you from being able to develop programming and teach other people what it is, correct?
Yeah, I think so.
Good.
I've seen enough evidence, you know, that there's something there, and it intrigues me. And of course, I understand, I guess, what Hoagland would call hyperdimensional physics enough to know that each one of us has a toroidal sphere, like a donut-shaped energy field around our bodies, and that when we are lying at the very, our bodies are lying at the very center of this vortex that is inside the donut. But when we die, this energy field doesn't die. It just rises back off the earth, unfolds into itself, and goes up a tube that connects it to the higher hyperdimensional body, which is what the tunnel is that everyone sees when they die. So I can understand it from a purely physics point of view. And so that makes me comfortable enough to know that there's a very, very large chance that there is no such thing as death. And that's what got me interested in all this, was the physics. And then I went out and interviewed people and found that, you know, in certain cases, it turned out to be true. There's also, of course, I believe you may have had this guy on the phone, I forget his name, but he did interview children who had near-death experiences, and these are children who hadn't read books and had their minds fed with maybe propaganda or something, and they told their stories, and their stories told from their very, you know, young point of view, very innocent and honest point of view, relates the same exact story that the older people who have near-death experiences have, which is just going through the tunnel, meeting beings of light who say they are your real parents, and the past life review, and then you go through a session where you decide what you're going to be when you come back. And I feel comfortable enough knowing that and knowing the physics to think that there's a very, very large chance that this is all true. And that is one of the reasons that, you know, we want to make this film in a popular form so that people can see it and know themselves that this is what to expect when they die.
Why are so many people afraid to talk about death?
I don't know. I think it has to do with this idea that it's finite, that we only have one shot at it, which, if you think about it, is really unfair. In the universe, to just have one shot at the thing, because it could be, you know, you could be born poor or handicapped or a number of other things. And so I think that we have been taught that there is only one shot at it, and this is your shot, and you have to grab as much as you can get, and this is the basis for greed and for wars and for power struggles and all the other things, which is just so unnecessary, especially when you realize that it is not a finite existence. And I think that the powers that be voiced this on us. You know, in the movie, Daniel Brinkley talks about how the government has investigated near-death experiences, but they refuse to tell us what they have found. And the reason that he says they refuse to tell us what they found is because it lessens fear. And if it lessens fear, then they lose their control, because the only way they can control us is through fear. And it's the last resort of a scoundrel, in a way. And so once you realize that you are infinite, they can't hold anything over you, and then they're in a lot of trouble. And so I think, actually, they are doing it. They don't want us to know. The power structures don't want us to know. And so in the end, this actually, you know, is the greatest subversive act of all, realizing that you do not die, that there's nothing to fear, and that you have an infinite multitude of possibilities, and that the universe is infinite. We know that already. So why, if you can go to a science course and learn that the universe is infinite, do you believe that your own life is finite? So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And now's the time, at this crucial point, as we're approaching 2012, everything is going to become unveiled. Everything is going to be revealed. And there are going to be no secrets anymore. It's already happening. It's what the internet is about. It's what your show is about. It's what my work is about. And all the secrets are going to come undone. And one of the main secrets of all is that we are hyperdimensional beings. This is a hyperdimensional universe, and the energies do not die. They only transform themselves. And when that realization finally hits us, no one can ever tell us what to do again. And we can face the world bravely every moment and know that no matter what they do to us, that nothing is real and nothing is finite. And then they will lose their power, and we can recreate the world, which is what I really think is going on over the next 2 or 3 years. And it's all part of this playing out of forces that are going to reconstruct society from the ground up. It's not going to happen from the top down, no matter what Obama does or what Pelosi does. None of that's going to work. It's going to come from us, and we're going to reject it. And so when people get angry at, say, the Tea Party people for protesting, I think that that's actually pretty cool that there's people brave enough to go out there and protest. And I think we need to get more protests, peacefully, but more protests going. You know, during the Bush administration, you know, dissent was patriotic, and now suddenly dissent is not patriotic. Well, I think dissent is patriotic still, and we need to stand up to the powers that be, realize that they really don't have our best interests at heart, no matter what platitudes that they're telling us. And the best way to do this is to face them and all the other fears, or other problems that we have, without fear. And that, and every day they're cooking up another basket of fear for us, whether it's global warming or food shortages or the wars in Iran. And they're constant. It's like there's a little team somewhere that's the fear team, working on what fears they can cast out today to get everybody upset and angry. And we have to realize this is all a grotesque manipulation to use our primal emotions like fear and use them against us. And we have to not be fearful and not create fear, but still be aware of what's going on, like a martial artist would.
Every civilization, though, Jay, has used fear to try to control their population.
Well, there you go. And that's exactly right, which is a great segue into where I want to go with this conversation, which is, why do they do this? Why do they use fear to control us? And that's actually the subject of my next film, Disclosure, which is going to reveal the nature of the people that have been foisting this fear on us. Now, not every civilization has used fear, because civilization is actually not the natural state of the human being. And I think that James Cameron's Avatar hit the nail squarely on the head. And have you heard of this thing called Avatar Depression Syndrome?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Yeah. So
we did a little segment on that. The day or two that Avatar came out, people got depressed, suicidal.
They did. And the question is why? And the answer is, and I know several psychologists have told me about this, and the answer is, they see the military in the film and realize that that is them. Then they see the Na'vi living in this paradise in nature, all connected together with to each other and to the planet, and they realize that they have become divorced and alienated from nature, and together this creates a cocktail of depression. And I have to give James Cameron a lot of kudos because, you know, he made one hell of a film, and I knew when I walked out of the theater that it was going to be the biggest hit of all time because he got into the underbelly of our mass psychosis here on this planet, which is exactly what you were talking about. Civilization is not a natural state. It is an unnatural state that has been foisted on us by custodians who have been here with us, ruling us through fear in order that we become and stay their slaves. And they use that fear to keep us in that state. You know, slave masters, the gentleman that lynching is named after, his name was Lynch, and he wrote a book about how slave masters in the South could control their slaves. And what they did was they would take the strongest male slave and terrorize him in front of everyone else. Mm-hmm. So it would create mass fear among all the slaves, and then one plantation owner could control 100 slaves just through fear. And I think that they're doing that to us on a massive scale. And we are going to go back to a simpler time. That's what's coming towards us right now. Cameron knows that, and he made his film with full recognition of where we are headed. And this is what's going on. We're losing our civilization, and people think that that's a terrible thing. And I'm here to tell you that it may not be so bad, actually, that maybe the damage to the planet and the pollution and the wars and the struggling and the starvation and all of that isn't necessary to the human condition. Human beings are very powerful spiritual creatures, and we have amazing abilities. And they're beginning, and civilization has caused those abilities to atrophy. And Cameron shows what a civilization is like that is deeply connected to the earth. And he also throws our own civilization right in our face in that film. And I know a lot of conservatives, and I'm fairly conservative myself, don't like Avatar, but I disagree with them. I think that Avatar is a one of the greatest films ever made, and Cameron has his hand on the pulse of not the body politic, but the body mythologies. And he knows that there's a deep yearning for us to move away from a fear-based civilization back into the natural rhythms of nature. And that is where we are headed, whether we like it or not. The central operating principle of this society is gone. The jobs aren't coming back. And I'm not trying to say that to make people afraid. Right. I'm trying to say that so that people will understand what is really going on here. I'd like to get into some of this as we get going, because it will definitely help people understand what is really going on right now and what has been going on for at least 100 or maybe even longer years, as the core principles of our society are taken out from under us and we are being cast adrift. We have to realize that the only way that we're going to be successful from here on in is to take personal responsibility for our lives, to develop a spiritual aspect towards each other and towards nature, and to begin to probably grow our own food and move back into semi-rural conditions.
It's easier said than done, though, isn't it?
It is. And that it's not going to be easy. Like I've said several times on this show before, you know, where we're going is going to be great, but getting there is not going to be any fun.
It'll be a bumpy road indeed.
It is. very bumpy. And I think we need to understand that and start preparing now. And so I hear the ads on your show for buying seeds and people getting gardens together. I think that's a first step. And after that, we will begin a slow devolving into a semi-rural lifestyle, but we'll still have our technologies. We'll still be connected to the internet and things, but the technologies won't be so toxic and they won't be so intrusive. And this is going to happen. I guarantee it. It's in the books. I read an interview with Obama about 4 months after he was elected in the New York Times magazine, and he was saying that the central operating principle of society is gone, and that we've been cast adrift. And so somewhere he knows this. I'm not sure he has the right solutions, but I think he knows it. And I think the engineers of our society know it, and they're trying to find a way. This is why they're doing all this deficit spending. They're trying to lessen the impact of this huge shift that's happening by unfortunately spending ourselves into oblivion to keep people with food and housing and everything. But eventually that's going to stop, and we have to now start thinking about what's going to happen when they can no longer keep us supported with welfare and food stamps and unemployment. And that is, to a lot of people, a very terrifying prospect. Again, I'm not trying to scare anybody. I'm just trying to be realistic.
It's reality.
It is, and it's going to hit us like a brick. And I think, you know, if you are on unemployment, you know, enjoy it, but start planning for a way out, because it's going to come to an end, and you don't want to be end up on the street or in refugee camps or something, which could really happen. And so I want to get into in the next hour about what this central organizing principle is that's disappearing, who is behind it, these custodians who have been ruling us for 6,000 years, and the historical proof of their existence. And it's not quite what anyone else has come up with. It's a completely different theory sort of mixed in with my work with Richard Hoagland and several historians and people who know what's going on have related to me. And when you hear it all makes a heck of a lot of sense. And I think when you realize that, then you can see that the central organizing principle of this society has been nothing that they've told us. It's something completely different, something hidden, something discreet that they've successfully hidden from us, because if we found out what was really going on, we would probably get very upset about it. And this all has to do, this goes back to my original work with the Cross of Henday, coronal mass ejections, alchemy. It all started then, and now I think I've reached a conclusion which is going to be pretty difficult to deny once the whole thing is laid out.
But can we win, Jay?
Well, yeah, I'm an eternal optimist. And of course, since the world is infinite and I'm infinite and you're infinite, yes, we will win. But like I said, the problem with the world right now is that the managers of this world, frankly, don't want us around anymore. And they're working very diligently to remove as much of the population as they can. And see, I know that people think that the world is overpopulated and getting rid of everybody is a really good idea. But, you know, not only do I like to say depopulation starts with you, but maybe the people that have been telling us that we're overpopulated aren't exactly telling us the truth. And maybe it's really not a question of population, it's a question of resources. And when we realize that, and we realize that we have a boundless energy and resources in this infinite world, we'll no longer be afraid of what's about to happen.
And how does it all turn into 2012 as well, Jay? We'll find out when we come back on Coast to Coast AM.